You're tuning in to another episode of Yo I with Jamie Anstey, an Offside Hockey Talk podcast. And what a doozy I have for you guys in this episode.
Way you beat them in this building, no matter where, no matter when you you play a team in your division, you have to be prepared to pay the price. And we paid the price, and I'm sure they paid the price tonight, but we ended up getting the 2 points.
This gentleman racked up 3,000 penalty minutes in the National Hockey League, played with the Montreal Canadiens, Boston Bruins, New York Rangers, also played for the Halifax Citadels from 79-80. Chris Nyland, how's everything going in Montreal, sir?
Good going, Jamie. Yeah, listen, it was not 300. It was
3,093, I believe.
It was not the Citadels. It was the Voyager.
Oh, yes. You're absolutely right.
But that's okay. No problem. Yeah, things are going well here in Montreal. You know, COVID, like everywhere, it's been an issue. Some places more than others. It's been difficult here. There's been quite a loss of life when it comes to the homes of the elderly, which is very unfortunate. But they're trying to get control of things here. There's been a curfew on for months. It hasn't been a whole lot of fun that way. But other than that, listen, things could be a whole lot worse, believe me.
No, 100%, and we'll get into a game that happened in 1984 between the Montreal Canadiens. So, Chris, if you could survive that ball, you can survive anything. If you were part of that 84 Good Friday game, which we'll get into here shortly, you can basically survive anything. I do have it wrote down as the Voyagers. I had Citadels on my mind because we just talked about Kevin Kaminsky off the air. So I apologize for that. 79-80,
no problem.
The Voyagers were here, then turned into the Nova Scotia Oilers. Then 88 in Halifax, they turned into the Halifax Citadels. So, yeah, you're absolutely right there. But I want to get into your role on RDS. I know you're covering the Montreal Canadiens. We won't get into too much conversation about the Leafs and the Habs in the next couple games, but if you want to add your input on how the Habs are playing without Carey Price.
Fire away.
Okay, so right now Carey Price is out of the lineup for the Montreal Canadiens. Don't know when he's going to return.
Here's the deal. He's out. He's been injured. Apparently had a slight concussion. I don't know what he had, but he is skating. He's going to be on the ice tomorrow, probably take some shots, and then he's going to be back with the team when they head to Toronto. He's going to meet them in Toronto. They go to Ottawa and play Wednesday night. And then it's off to Toronto, and he's going to meet the team there.
When do you see Carey Price maybe returning? And before I forget, the Gallagher situation too?
Yeah, Gallagher's skating, but he'll probably be back maybe a game or two before the playoffs, I would think. I would think he'd want to play before the playoffs just to get a little action in, maybe the last two games of the year. I would say that for both the Price and Gallagher. He's been, like I said, he's been skating. It all depends on what's going on with his hand. Also, Tatar's another one. I think he'll be back for the playoffs. But, God, looks like they don't miss them right now.
So we've got the Maple Leafs play the Canadiens two more times. It's safe to say, Nyland, we won't see Carey Price versus the Toronto Maple Leafs.
First of all, it's Chris, and we could see Price with the Maple Leafs. I would venture to say he'd probably have a chance of playing on Saturday night. I don't know.
Okay.
Just my gut telling me that. Nothing that I know, any inside scoop or anything.
So we won't see Carey Price in the next two games where the Toronto Maple Leafs play.
Yeah, no, maybe Saturday night. Like I said, they play in Ottawa,
okay,
and they play in Toronto, and then Toronto again. So I'm thinking maybe Saturday night. If he's going to Toronto, I don't know if he's going to sit on the bench. I think he'd want to play a game. So we'll see what happens.
Thanks for the little update there with the Montreal Canadiens. I know the Leafs play them the next two times. So we were wondering if Carey Price was going to come back or what his situation is. But you did play 79-80. You play with the Nova Scotia Voyagers, 79-80. You play one season. How was your whole experience in Halifax playing in the American Hockey League?
I loved it there. You know, it was my first year pro. I got sent there from the Canadiens. I was on a 5-game tryout. I was fortunate enough to get an opportunity to play my first game in Maine, where I got in a fight with Glenn Cochran and cut him open. And I did pretty good in the fight. And I had a contract offer the next day. My tryout was a 5-game tryout for $200 a game. And after that fight, they offered me a contract, which I signed. And I spent 49 games there my first year, and I ended up getting called up. So I didn't finish the year there. I was happy in one sense, but I certainly missed the teammates I had in Halifax. It was kind of nice. I started the season with them, and it would have been nice to, I guess, finish that season with those guys, but it wasn't to be, and I ended up in Montreal, and we lost in the first round to Minnesota in 7 games. But I loved Halifax. Totally, I loved the people. People were awesome. It was a fun place to play, the Metro Center, and really enjoyed my first year pro hockey.
Because you played 3 years. On HockeyDB, it doesn't show that you played in Maine or any other place besides. You spent 3 years at Northeastern University.
Yeah.
What did and you got drafted in 1978, round 19, 231st overall in the 1978 NHL amateur draft. What did Montreal see in you? Like, was there fighting in university hockey? Like,
no,
what did the Habs see in you? Because if everyone that watches Habs games in the 80s, they see Nyland fighting. I didn't really get to see much of you playing with the Bruins, but most of the YouTube videos, it's you fighting in those videos. So what did Montreal see in you that made them want to draft you in 1978?
Well, I don't think they saw much in me, to be honest with you. Okay. I was drafted in that round, and I was drafted so late because it was a favor. My coach was a good friend of Dickie Moore, and a good friend of Doug Harvey, and his name was Judge Paul King.
Okay.
And Judge King was a big backer of mine. He helped me navigate some issues I had through my young life. He was a hockey coach of mine who I absolutely adored him. He really liked me as a player and a person. He took interest in me, and then I played for him, and he asked Dickie Moore and he asked Doug Harvey to try and get the Canadians to draft me in 1978, and they did a favor for Judge King, and they ended up drafting me in that 17th round. And or whatever round it was, 19th, it was a favor, actually. So, I didn't fight in college. I had one fight. I got suspended. I scored some goals. I could play the game pretty good. But, again, I didn't rip up college hockey. But when I got to the American League, I didn't think I was going to be a fighter when I got to Halifax. That just happened. I played, kind of grew up watching the Bruins. I played a physical brand of hockey. I liked the way they played hockey. And once I started playing that style, which was my first game, I got challenged right away. I think a lot of guys thought I was a college kid. American who didn't know anything about fighting, and they could take advantage of me. But they quickly found out that that really didn't matter. And, you know, I fought every tough guy in the league my first year, first half of season in Halifax, fought almost every night. And, you know, by the 49th game, I had 15 goals, 10 assists, and 304 minutes in penalties, and I got called up.
You played 9 seasons with the Montreal Canadiens. Let's talk about the Battle of Quebec. It was 1984 on a Good Friday, Quebec Nordiques versus the Montreal Canadiens. As Bob Cole says in the YouTube videos, this is a brawl to end all brawls. It didn't seem like it stopped. Like, it started when it started, and it just went on until everyone was ejected from the game almost. Like, just talk about your experience. Like, what led up to that brawl? Like, was there something that happened games before that game? Like, just walk through.
All that game. I'll tell you how it started. With Dale Hunter. Okay. Had Guy Carboneau down at the end of a period, started punching him in the head, and I was there. I tried to get in, and Randy Moeller grabbed me. Everybody started mulling around. I was still trying to get at Carboneau. I told him to let me go. I was trying to get at Hunter to help him, and I know Moeller couldn't let me go. So when he wouldn't let me go, I hit him. I cracked him, and away we went. You know, and I know Bruce Hood in his book said that I was responsible for the brawl, but fact of the matter is he was. Dale Hunter, in doing what he was doing to my line mate, I did what he always did. I protect my teammates. And in trying to get at him, like I said, Moeller tried to stop me, and I wasn't going to let him. That being said, the fight went on, and the period ended, and we went back in the room. And Bruce Hood did not make anybody aware that they were kicked out of the game. Nobody was told. So we came back out on the ice for the next period.
Oh, wow.
He looked at me. He looked at a few other guys. What are they doing out here? Well, we were never told we were out of the game.
Yeah, because it's...
A lot of that is Bruce Hood's issue. Yeah.
I watched the video today. It's about 2 hours and 10 minutes, and the actual fight footage is 27 minutes and 10 seconds on YouTube. Yep. So people tuning in, hop on YouTube, NHL Classics, Battle of Quebec, or NHL Classics, The Good Friday Brawl, 1984, Canadiens and Nordiques. As you guys were fighting, the announcer in the Montreal Forum was still announcing penalties. Probably that happened 10 minutes prior to you guys still fighting. And you know, that's what Bob Cole said, the brawl to end all brawls. Like, that game was played, like, during the COVID, before the season started in January 13th or the 15th of this year, and Sportsnet was showing replay games. That 79 Toronto-Montreal, the 86 Stanley Cup Montreal, that game was showed probably 10 to 12, maybe 15 times. Like, it was, you just don't get tired of that stuff, because that's what people kind of miss in this game, fighting. What's your opinion on, if you want to get into Tom Wilson, what you saw last night, like, is there room in the game? I know I've met George Parrish through different charity events. I'm not picking a side. I'm not saying George Parrish is doing a bad job or whoever decided last night to slap Tom Wilson with a $5,000 fine on what he did to Biskevich. What's your take on Tom Wilson? And we've got Reeves in Las Vegas. I know this year Toronto got grittier. At one point, Leaf Nation and everybody else, people in Winnipeg, were saying, well, look at Toronto. They look like the dirtiest team in the league. Well, I talked to people connected to Wayne Simmonds, and they've said in the last 15-odd years that Wayne Simmonds has been in the league, he has seen no pushback from the Toronto Maple Leafs. He just basically said, like, I want to play on the Toronto Maple Leafs because they need some grit Joe Thornton's adding some grit. He was poking at Ehlers a couple games ago. Now Ehlers is not coming back. So that's what we want to see, but we don't want to see what Tom Wilson did last night, because when you woke up this morning and you looked at Twitter, it was all Tom Wilson. It was just, Twitter blew up, and high percentage of the votes disagreed with the $5,000 fine. He should be kicked out of the league. He should be banned from ever playing hockey again. He should be kicked out of arenas all across the world. What's your opinion on a team maybe having to have a guy that can not do so much what Tom Wilson did, but maybe have like a Wayne Simmons who does it right?
Well, Tom Wilson can play hockey.
Oh, he can score 20 goals and still get 200 penalty minutes. That's the guy you want.
Yeah,
you want
Tom Wilson can play hockey.
He can play hockey.
The fact of the matter is,
when done properly.
What's that?
You're absolutely right, Chris. He can play hockey. So, sorry. Continue with your thought there on Tom Wilson. Sorry, Chris.
Yeah. Well, like I said, he can play hockey. I don't have a problem with guys fighting in hockey. Two guys want to fight, drop their gloves, they get pissed off at each other. Fine. I guess back in the day, what we had guys sitting on the bench all the time. And listen, gave them an opportunity to play in the NHL. It was a whole different time, whole different era. You can't afford to do that today. You have to have guys who can play the game and be able to fight. Wilson can do that. Reeves can, to some extent. I guess the problem I have with Wilson, I didn't care so much what he did to Buchnevich. He punched him in the back of the head a little bit. I think the real bad thing was with Panarin. When he ripped them and dragged all them around and whacked his head off the ice, he's going to be out for the rest of the year. I think George Parros, I think the league has no balls to do anything to him. I think what he did was overboard. I can certainly understand it because I've done things overboard, but I paid for it. He has at times, but something like that to a skilled player to do what he did to Panarin, I have a problem with that. And what I don't like about Tom Wilson is I remember a game in Vegas when Reeves was trying to get him to fight and he wouldn't fight. And it pissed me off watching it because here's a guy who's a supposed tough guy, but he thinks he's that good a player that he doesn't have time to fight Ryan Reeves. So I say Tom Wilson had no balls when it came to fighting Ryan Reeves that game. And if he's a tough guy, like, then fight Ryan Reeves. Don't run 100%. From him. And he ran from him, and he put it like, well, I'm not going to go sit in the box for 5 minutes with you. It's not worth it. Like, hello? So I that's the thing I don't like about Tom Wilson. And I like him. I love the way he plays the game. But when he goes, and I've done it, believe me, I've gone over the edge. I hit Middleton one time. It was way out of character for me. And it's the only incident I had like that. And it's one that I wish I could take back, but I can't. So when I see guys do that, I certainly can understand it to an extent, but you have to pay a price. And I don't think the league has the balls to do something. A $5,000 fine is not going to do anything to curtail that kind of behavior. So I think it's a joke.
What do you think the penalty should have been? Like I mentioned, Chris, I've met.
Well, I don't know what
it's tough.
Be.
It's
the
tough.
League should have done something. Panarin's out the rest of the season, and if it was an 82 game season, he could have been out the rest of the way. You don't know what his condition is now, as far as his head, his brain, the possibility of a severe concussion. There, he got slammed to the ice. No helmet on, got ripped off in that whole thing. And I know the league might say, well, he jumped on Wilson, but he jumped on him trying to help his teammate. And Wilson knew who he had, and he just ragdolled him and slammed his head in the ice. So I think that was worse than what he did to Buchnevich.
When Marty McSorley in 93 went after Gilmore, you don't see much of this anymore because – we'll talk about the Edler and Simmons fight, when Edler hit Zach Hyman in the knee and knocked Hyman out, everyone said afterwards, that wasn't Edler's fight. Edler shouldn't have fought Wayne Simmons. But 93, when McSorley, and I've met McSorley tons of times, he's a really nice guy. But when a battle pursues on the ice, don't judge the guy what he does on the ice compared to what you see outside of the rink. And a lot of people look at McSorley and did what he did to Brashear. When I look at McSorley, I don't care what happened on the ice. That's the battlefield. When you guys are off the ice and you're outside the rink, it's a whole different atmosphere. So don't look at Edler saying he was dirty and now he's looked at a dirty player, whether that was dirty or not. Like, yes, Offside loves talking about the Leafs. We talk about the Leafs every week. Was it dirty? Was it not dirty? I don't know. Like, it is what it is. But do you think that Edler had to fight Simmons? Because a lot of people are saying you have to answer the bell. Because when McSorley hit Gilmore, who came in? Wendell Clark. Wendell Clark, a smaller guy compared to McSorley. Same what you just said about Reeves and Wilson.
Yeah, but Wendell Clark, not smaller guys, not...
Well, I'm talking about height-wise. Like, he was smaller. Yeah, not toughness-wise, but he was smaller.
Yeah, but that has nothing to do with it. He can handle McSorley. Okay. That's not
so how come Reeves
wouldn't fight him? I don't know why Wilson didn't fight him, to be honest with you. The reason I gave is because I think Wilson thinks he doesn't have to sit in the penalty box for 5 minutes with Reeves. That's what I thought. That's how I looked at it.
Do you think maybe Horvat?
What are you asking me?
Do you think Horvat or somebody else should have stepped in and fought Simmons instead of Edler? But you've got to answer the bell.
No. Okay. Listen, perfect. Edler, and it was more reactionary. It's not like he went to said, "Oh, I'm going to go knee Zach Hyman."
Yeah,
the guy was Hyman was trying to get by him. Edler went the wrong way, and he tried to stick his leg out to keep him from going. It's not the first time it happened in the game, and it won't be the last. Now, as far as Edler having to answer for it, he's not a fighter. Simmons went after him, you know, certainly lopsided. It's not like – and since when does Zach Hyman have to stick up for himself? The last time he did, he swung his stick at someone, didn't he? Bring his stick down on Pionk. He swung his stick to hands.
I think so. Yeah.
Nothing really happened to him.
The John.
So I just get a kick out of a guy like Hyman, someone Simmons having to go after a guy like Edler. Edler, I mean, come on.
Why you brought Simmons into the equation. That's why you brought him into Toronto, not to stick up for other players, but add grit that Simmons didn't see 20. And the point he was grip,
but yeah, stick up for guys. Maybe if they're playing against a Ryan Reeves or a Tom Wilson, then I don't mind if you want. But Alex Edler, that doesn't take a whole lot of balls to go after a guy like Edler. You know, I don't see it. I could see if he went after Wilson or Reeves or one of those guys, that bigger guys that are known to fight. Again, I don't believe Edler, you know, intended to do that. It was a reaction.
Moving away from the Edler fight and fighting, he did play with the New York Rangers. Good friend of mine, Kyle Hall, is part of the Broadway Hat Podcast. He's a huge fan. So if you're on Twitter and you happen to see Broadway Hat Podcast, Kyle Hall, he's actually been trying to get a hold of you to get on his podcast where you were a Ranger. Yeah. So I'm going to take the time now you did play with the Rangers. Any cool stories, any big fights during your time in New York?
No, you know, I fought, stuck up for my teammates, you know, a lot in Philadelphia, Berube, Chychrun, Cockner, those guys. It was much like when I played for the Canadians and I was going up against the Bruins. The Bruins always had about four or five guys who could fight. Same thing with the Flyers. When I got to New York, I was really the only guy there to do any fighting. Then Rudy Pochuk came and he helped out. But, no brawls or anything, but I did my share of fighting when I was in New York.
So being from Boston, Massachusetts, Chris, how cool was it to play for the team you watched growing up in Boston? Like, you ended up with the Boston Bruins. How did that feel? Like, how did it all happen? Like, was there a trade, or was the end of the season? Like, how
I got traded from the Rangers. You know, I had hurt myself a couple times. I broke my arm a couple times, hurt my knee. They promised me a contract, Neil Smith, and then he kind of he actually rescinded the promise to sign me the contract because of the injuries. And I said, okay, you don't want to sign me the deal. You said you were going to. I know I had the injuries, but now I want to be traded. I don't want to fucking play for you anymore or this team. And he said, oh, no, you can't. I said, no, I can't. You promised me a fucking contract. I got injured. I got hurt. You don't want to give me a contract. I don't want to fucking be here anymore.
And that's the God honest truth, too. Like, I'm glad you're telling the truth because, like...
No. The thing is, you ask me a question, I'm going to answer it.
That's perfect. The good, perfect answer. I know
and
people
anyway,
want the truth, and that's a...
Hang on, Jamie.
Awesome.
Hang on. So I told Neil Smith that I didn't want to play there anymore because he didn't keep his promise of the contract, and he ended up trading me to Boston. Which I appreciate because that's where I wanted to go. I actually wanted to go back to Montreal, but that didn't happen. I ended up in Boston. It was fun to play for the Bruins the short time I was there. I loved playing with Ray Bourque and Neely and the guys, Craig Janney. I always wanted to be a Bruin as a kid. But, you know, by the time I got to Boston, I was pretty beat up, my body, physically. I still did my job, but... I started getting hurt a lot. You know, I broke my arm a couple times, hurt my knee. Then ended up breaking my ankle in Boston. And, I was all beat up. I enjoyed the short time I was there and grateful for it. And then I was also grateful and happy to they put me on waivers my second year there. And Montreal picked me up, and I was able to come back and retire a Montreal Canadian, which I was happy and grateful for.
To my right, I've got your photo. Like, we've conversed in the last year, so you've been here for Halifax. You've been in Halifax for Heart and Stroke, which we'll get into in a second. But you sent me the photo of you squaring off. I believe it's I can't see it at the moment, but I believe it's Terry O'Reilly. Yeah. How did that feel? Like, did you grow up watching Terry? Like, did you ever think, oh, I can't wait to fight the Tasmanian Devil? Like, I've met Terry. That must have been cool, like, to be a Montreal Canadian and square up against Terry O'Reilly, who was a Boston Bruin. And who won the fight, by the way? Like, the picture doesn't show who won the fight because you guys are far apart and you're squaring off. But how did tell the viewers how the fight went down, how it all transpired.
The first fight I had against O'Reilly was in the Forum in Montreal. I fought Jonathan, then I fought him, and he hit me with two punches, and my head was, you know, my eyes were blurry, and I was bleeding like a stuffed pig. And then I fought him again in Boston where I cut him open for 25 stitches, hit him with one punch, really good punch, and hurt him bad. And then we had a couple fights where they were, you know, we just traded shots, but that's not for me to, I guess, say who won or lost. There's enough people out there.
When you say Jonathan, you mean Stan Jonathan?
Just for people
not knowing who, because Jonathan could be a first name or a last name, but you're talking about Stan Jonathan. We did touch. We did touch up on some of the teams you played for. Is there any other cool stories? Like, Rick Bonus is here from the Maritimes. How was he as a coach? Like, how was Rick?
Well, it wasn't good with me and Rick. Rick at the time, he went from being an assistant to a head coach in Boston. And listen, I liked Rick a whole lot, but he didn't have a whole lot of respect for me at the time. And listen, I get it. He got a head coaching job there, but he was somewhat a puppet for Harry Sinden and Milbury at the time. And they decided they were going to play games with me. And what happened in Boston in training camp, there's an A squad and a B squad.
Yep.
And most of the veterans are on the A squad. Well, they put me on the B squad for whatever reason. I don't know. They wanted to see if I wanted to be a Bruin or not. I don't know what it was. But anyway, I was on the B squad, and I wasn't too happy with that. The Bruins went on a road trip beginning of the year, and that big Western trip. And I didn't play one game on that road trip, six games. I, you know, skated every day. Bonus wouldn't play me. And the last game, we were in Chicago. They were playing Byers, and they were playing another guy named Alan Stewart. They were doing all the fighting. I remember in Chicago Stadium, I was went in the warm-up. I'm not in the lineup sheet when I come off. I get on the bike, and I'm pedaling the bike, and Rick Bonus walks by me and says, geez, I'm really proud of the way you're handling this. And I'm like, yeah, sure. You know, you know, just full of shit. And anyway, they play that game. I think Al Stewart fought. Byers fought. We flew home the next day. Alan Stewart got in his car, was fed up with fighting in hockey, and drove back to wherever he's from in Canada. Wow. And then Byers broke his ankle the next day in practice. He got hit with a shot and broke his ankle. So after practice, I'm sitting there, and Rick Bonus came in to me, and he said, hey, Knuckle, you ready to go? You ready to go tomorrow? And I said, Rick, go fuck yourself, Rick. And he didn't like that. He said, what? I said, go fuck yourself. I said, you think I'm going to fucking go through a fucking wall for you now after you shit on me for the last fucking 10 games? No, thanks, Rick.
He had really feel-good story, though. Feel-good story, though. He got to coach Dallas, a great run there in the playoffs. But
yeah, I was happy.
A lot of good stories. You know? A lot of great stories about Rick Bonus.
I was happy for Rick. No, I really was. Yeah. When I played for him and he was a puppet for Sinden and Milbury, it wasn't a fucking feel-good story at all. But there's a good one this past year. I'm glad to see he got the Stanley Cup final. I was hoping they would have won it for him, to be honest with you.
It's awesome.
Because he is a good guy.
You're telling the God honest truth, Chris. Like that's a lot of people just kind of hide behind the curtain and just say the good things, and they don't act.
You'll get the truth from me, Jamie.
Oh, I know. I've rode in a van with you during heart and stroke. It's really too bad. It's really too bad. Now it's been 2 years we haven't had the event here in Halifax. Very unfortunate too. We had Dale Harachuk during the 2 years ago. But now that I have you here on the screen, I do want to say, like, I know, I think at the time you were in the van, I'm not going to mention this person's name just for maybe privacy reasons, but an individual called you on the phone, and after that conversation, you've got guys calling you, because you've gone through, we won't get into your lifelong story, because we'll get into your book here shortly, but you know, a lot of guys are calling you, which is great, because you were going through a lot in the 80s and the 90s, and you have guys calling you. Like I mentioned, I won't mention names, but that must feel good.
Go ahead. Who called me? I'm curious.
I believe it was. Do you remember the conversation when Dale Weiss called your cell phone in the minivan? Dale, let's say Dale Weiss called your phone, and he's a tough guy, right? He's gone through things. Like we don't have to get into Wade Belak, Rick Rippon, all those guys that have gone through getting hit in the head, and obviously we know what happened to Belak and Rick Rippon, but you went through a whole ton of stuff. I'm not going to get into much of that because I want people to go to the store, because I've read your book. It's right behind me, Fighting Back. But how does it feel? Like, guys are, like, Dale Weiss calling you, guys that have gone through the ringer and calling you to say, how do I get through this? Because to be honest, Chris, well, you went Dale through Weiss, it in the 80s and the 90s. So what's
I think he's pretty good. Dale Weiss, I think he's doing okay, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
As far as guys who played that role and had difficulty afterwards, yeah, I'm always willing to help guys. They put their hand out, they ask for help.
Awesome, man.
I don't have a problem with helping out.
You still got the wheels? If Heart and Stroke Halifax or Heart and Stroke Hockey Heroes calls you back, and if Annie called you from Moncton, there's quite a few Alan Cotes here all the time. I was on the ice with Denny Marouk a year or so ago, and I've had Denny on this on this OI. You still got the wheels? You still got the wheels?
I don't know about the wheels, but I can still go get around.
Well, Marty McSorley showed up one year with crutches because he had a little bit of an incident in the bathtub during the a couple years ago. Just I think the stories, Chris. If you can just show up. And if Heart and Stroke's willing to pay them, if I had the money, I'd send Chris Nyland in a heartbeat just because you've got stories.
Well, I'm sure I'll get invited again. We'll see what happens.
I'll be pushing the envelope, sir. So, get into your book. It's behind me there called Fighting Back. So if people want to find the book, it's on Amazon. It's on Indigo. All those good places where you can get books. But talk about your book. Like I mentioned, we could talk for days because I know there was drugs going on in the 80s. There was drinking. Like Grant Fuhr got suspended for the Oilers for drugs. And look, if you got time, people tuning in, check out the Bob Probert story. Like, I want people to go and check your book out to get the full story instead of us talking about it. But can you just kind of talk about the book a little bit?
Yeah, just a book about, you know, me growing up in Boston and my road to the NHL, what happened in the NHL, a little bit what happened after my career. I didn't do drugs when I played hockey in the NHL. I certainly drank my certain amount of alcohol. It was a big thing in the 80s. There was a lot of drinking going on in the NHL. And I got addicted to pain medication after I retired, a bunch of surgeries. I wasn't in a good place. I did something about it. I went to treatment. I got help. It's all there in the book.
Awesome, man.
And I'm grateful that my life is back on track. So things are good.
Oh, that's awesome. I know I talked to Kevin Kaminsky and Brent Myers. I've been seeing his story on Facebook and guys that have gone through the 80s and 90s fighting, Stu Grimson. There's feel-good stories all across the board right now, and it's good to see that someone took the time to really get help, and it's unfortunate some others had their lives taken from medication. What's going on? You're on RDS. I know you're busy covering the.
I'm on TSN actually.
Okay.
I'm on TSN, the English station.
Okay.
I have a radio show I do here Monday through Friday from noon to three. From noon to one, I do Habs Lunch, and then from one to three, I do a show called Off the Cuff with my partner Sean Campbell. We do a lot of hockey. We do NFL, golf, but mostly hockey-centric.
I thought in Montreal it was just called RDS. I wasn't sure if it was called TSN.
TSN. RDS is the French TSN. So, yeah, I'm not on that one. Mine's English.
Last thing, I know you've got a meeting to attend to here shortly. I was on the... on your website, which is knucklesnyland.com. We'll get into how you got your nickname, by the way, Knuckles, but knucklesnyland.com for people tuning in. I checked it out about an hour ago. You've got a brand new logo. You got a hoodie and a t-shirt on there. I've been on there quite a few times. I'm going to take a screenshot of this conversation just to show the viewers the t-shirt I have. It fit before COVID started. Now I've got a COVID belly, so it doesn't fit anymore. So I'm gonna be hopping on. I'm gonna be. I'm still playing hockey. You sent me a medium. You sent me a medium. If there's an extra large on online, I'll be sending. I'll be sending Jamie an email again. How to get an extra large shirt? I'm gonna get the new hoodie. Like I mentioned off air, Kevin Kaminsky got his clothing killer hockey. You guys are doing an amazing job with mental health and just being advocates towards how your guys' life was and making sure kids and others don't go down the same road. It's remarkable, and it's an influence. It's an influence for me. Because I go through mental health, I've gone through alcohol, and I look up to you, I look up to Kevin, I look up to...
That's good, I'm glad.
Yeah, yep. 100%, man. So it was
good
cool.
Good for you, Jamie.
No, thank you very much, and cool little story. If you remember, when you were here the last time of Hockey Heroes, it was you and Rick Natras in the van, and yeah. Rick wanted to go to a place in Halifax called Sieverts, which doesn't exist now because it's the COVID, the cigar business kind of went south here in Halifax. But I remember that day in the van, man, and you and Rick, and people forget about like Rick Natras and you know, I had Jason Podolin on the show. You've played well over 600 NHL games if my memory serves me correctly. A lot of people forget. It's I only want to hear from the Hall of Famers or the guys that have played 1,000 games, right? Jason Podolin played 41 games. So just to give you a little bit of idea of, like, the OI and bring these guys on that, you know, people may forget about. It's unfortunate, but, man, like, if someone doesn't influence you, then I can see, like, there's no connection. But, man, like, this is the whole purpose of the OI, to get you on and to get these people
Awesome. I appreciate it. Listen, it's today the players change, right? The game changes.
100%.
You know, hockey's still hockey in a sense, but, you know, it's the guys today. Those are people that everybody wants to see, and I don't blame them. You know, I look at little Gallagher here in Montreal. They absolutely love him. Mm. And one day Gallagher will be gone and somebody else will come in. But,
how about Cole Caulfield, the last two games in overtime?
It's been awesome to see him do what he did. Yeah, good little player. And it's certainly a guy they need. They need a guy that can score goals, and he can do that. That's for sure.
What's your opinion on who Toronto or Montreal may face in the playoffs? Like right now, we've got
Toronto. I think it's going to be Montreal and Toronto,
which not has happened since 1979. By the way, Montreal, we almost got there in 93. We almost got Toronto. Almost got to face Montreal, but there's a guy on the other side by the name of Wayne Gretzky, who happened to be an okay player. Did he high stick Gilmore in the face and? Should he have played in the overtime? Who really knows? Like, I've talked to Dave McElwain, and he's kind of said, man, that happened, 30 years ago? So it's water under the bridge, Chris. But how did you get your nickname, Knuckles?
I got that in college from a friend of mine, Jerry Dwyer. He played college hockey with me, and I always had my hands all cut up and from fighting and not on the ice. I used to come into practice all the time. They said, what happened? I don't know. And then I broke my knuckles a couple times while I was in college. And they gave me the nickname Knuckles, and it stuck. I got it before I got in the NHL. So pretty funny.
Awesome, man. I want to ask, how can people reach out? Just talk about your website, knucklesandisland.com, the clothing brand. And your Twitter. I know you're on Twitter. Before we go, just talk about your website and how can people reach out on Twitter.
Yeah, it's info at Knuckles Nylon. Attention, Jamie. We got the hoodies, hats, long sleeve T-shirts. It's a new logo. We're just putting it out there to get some feelers, see how people like it. I love the logo. It's a new logo. Yep. Really cool looking. And never back down, never stay down. And it's you can just go to knucklesnylon.com, attention Jamie, and you can make your inquiries there.
Yeah, it's about the message too. Like when you're wearing the clothing and you're out and about, and people are like, well, that's, you know, if they look up to Chris Nyland, that starts the conversation. Like, oh, I remember Chris, and you know, that's right. What it's all about. It's not about, you know, pumping someone else's tires. It's just starting the message. Like, you know, whether it's Sober Athletic Wear, who I show off, or Knuckles Brand, or Killer Hockey, it's about the message. And what does the message, what's behind the message, right? It's going to help someone go on the website and check out your story and check out your books. You got memorabilia, all that good stuff. But thank you very much, Chris, for joining me on another episode.
It's been a pleasure.
On another episode.
I love Nova Scotia, Halifax, awesome. My good friend Dan Robertson here, he does the radio for TSN, the Canadians. Yep. He covered the Citadels, was their voice for quite a few years. So yeah,
and the Mooseheads as well. So
yeah, the Mooseheads, exactly.
I actually tuned in to the Montreal feed last night. Because of Dan Robertson and Dave Poulin, was on there too. Really good friend. Have a good connection with Dave Poulin and Dan Robertson. That was an amazing tandem last night in that Montreal-Toronto game. But Chris, I will let you go. You have a busy evening ahead of you. But let's hope Montreal and Toronto face off in the Stanley Cup playoffs when they do begin.
Hopefully they do. All right, Jamie, good luck, pal. Thanks so much, and one day at a time, my friend, all right?
Thank you very much. Take care, Chris.
All right, be well. All righty, be well, pal. Take care, Jamie.
Yeah, thanks, Chris.